Well, welcome to everybody. Thank you for having me tonight. I know some of you from a while back. It's good to see some familiar faces. It's also good to see a lot of people I haven't met yet. It's a blessing to be part of the family of God, and wherever you go, you find family. It's a huge blessing. I appreciate you being here tonight also because of the subject that we're going to be talking about tonight. It is not an easy subject. It's not easy to talk about. It's not easy to hear, but it is incredibly needed right now, unfortunately. We're going to be talking this evening about overcoming pornography, and it's an important topic because it is so prevalent. Even the world is realizing right now how much of a problem this is in our culture, and it is certainly a problem within the Lord's church as well. It is something that we need to be able to talk about, and we need to be able to talk about in purity. There are different ways to approach this topic, and it is important that we are pure in the way that we do that. And that's my goal tonight, is to talk about this in a way for all ages and both genders, but to also talk about it in a way that is helpfully specific without being graphic, because it doesn't do any good to talk about these things in vague generalities without giving some real tools for helping people. There are all sorts of people who are caught up in this sin. And we need more tools to be able to help people out. If I am passionate about this topic this evening, it is because this was my struggle for a large part of my walk with the Lord. And I know what it's like to be caught in this sin. By God's grace, it's been almost 7 years. Thanks to Him, I say that not to build myself up, but to offer hope to those who may be in an audience like this who are struggling with this and who maybe are discouraged or feeling like they are trapped and that there's not a lot of hope. That is certainly the nature of sin, is Satan wants us to feel like there is no hope. And by God's grace, there is hope. So we're going to talk, and the lesson comes tonight in two main parts. We're going to talk about the problem of pornography in the first section. If you are not aware of what a problem it is, we need to talk about that. And the second half, which hopefully we'll spend more of our time on, is how to get out. Many people are convinced that it's a problem, but are having a hard time actually getting out of it. So let's begin in Matthew chapter 5. If you would open your Bibles with me tonight, we want to approach this from a biblical perspective. Jesus spoke on this. The first thing we need to establish about pornography is that it is indeed a sin. There have been different efforts to try to rationalize this. It's amazing our ability to rationalize when we are caught up in something. Matthew chapter 5, though, Jesus addresses this in the Sermon on the Mount in verse 27 of Matthew 5. He said, "You have heard that it was said, 'You shall not commit adultery.' But I say to you that everyone who looks at a woman with lustful intent has already committed adultery with her in his heart." Pornography, at its very core, is lustful. And Jesus says that to look with lust is sin. And he really ties it all the way to its fullest extent, that spiritually speaking, this is adultery. This is how the Lord looks at this sin. And if we look at it any other way, we're not seeing clearly. If you look to lust, you've already committed adultery in your heart. And as we think about this, pornography can be defined in different ways, and sometimes people try to draw lines, kind of artificial lines, but it's important for us to realize anything in which you're looking to lust is still sinful, even if it wouldn't be maybe as explicit as some other material. And also, you know, there have been some things recently, I mean, I guess these have been around for a while, but even novels that don't have pictures in them but are romance novels or whatever that describe lustful things, would that really be any less pornographic? It is intended to incite lust. That is the purpose of those things. And so it would be essentially pornographic in nature. It would be sinful in nature. It's important to note that even if you're looking at something that even the world wouldn't necessarily call pornography, you know, you get on Facebook, you get on the internet to look at pictures of people that you're looking to lust, that is still lust. That is still sin. It's so important for us to be honest with ourselves about what we're doing and why we're doing it, and to draw the line where Jesus draws the line. He says, if you've looked to lust, Anyone who looks at a woman with lustful intent has already committed adultery with her in his heart. You know, he mentions it here from kind of the man's perspective, that a man looking at a woman would be lustful. But it's important for us to note that pornography is not just a men's problem. It's perhaps predominantly a men's problem, but it is not exclusively a men's problem. And I feel like in my very limited experience, the Lord's body, and again, places that I've been, has become more aware of this problem, and there are more resources available for men who are struggling with this to get help and to get out of this. We need the same resources available for women. We need women to be able to help women. We need men to be able to help men out of this trap, out of this terrible sin. I've heard before a brother named Simon Harris define sexual purity as only obtaining sexual pleasure from your spouse. Anything outside of that is impurity. And we must draw the line where the Bible draws the line. That is where the Lord put the sexual relationship, is in the marriage. And that is where it is to remain. Anything outside of that is sin. In Psalm 32, David is writing this psalm, and we don't know if this is in the context of his sin with Bathsheba, as we know about Psalm 51. But in Psalm 32, David describes the crippling effect that hidden sin can have in our lives. Psalm 32, verses 3 and 4, David says, When I kept silent, my bones wasted away through my groaning all day long. For day and night your hand was heavy upon me. My strength was dried up as by the heat of summer. When you're hiding sin in your life, as it's so easy to do with this sin in particular, with how accessible it is, you know, on different devices and things like that, you might think, oh, I can control this. I'll just relegate it, you know, to this area of my life and I can hide it. It's okay. But no, sin affects every area of our life. And when it's hidden, especially when we're not confessing it, when we're not repenting of it, it can destroy so many other areas of our service to the Lord. I remember coming to assemblies like this one, you know, on this first day of the week, and just being laden with guilt because of what I had done. Even just recently, before that, this is a terrible sin, and it doesn't just affect us privately. If you look at God's good gift of marriage in Genesis 2, 24 and 25, the Lord is the one who created the sexual relationship, and it is to be good and right and beautiful in its proper place. We have the Song of Solomon in the Old Testament that is a celebration of romantic love in its right place. In Genesis 2 and verse 24, therefore a man shall leave his father and mother and hold fast to his wife, and they shall become one flesh. And the man and his wife were both naked and were not ashamed. There is not to be shame within the bounds of marriage that God created. You can look at past generations especially and see that if we react to sexual sin by just running from sexuality entirely, that's not the solution to the problem. That actually creates other problems that are difficult to deal with as well. But the solution is to look at God's gift the way He's given it to us and fight to let it be exactly what God created it to be. I want to share this illustration that I heard in a lesson from Gary Henry. You might break down biblical romantic love into four parts. That there is a physical attraction, that God created men and women to be attracted to one another. But on top of that, there's a personal attraction for someone's personality, the way that they are, the way that who they've chosen to be and build themselves into. But on top of that, there is a marriage covenant, that there are bounds and restrictions placed for the protection of the people in that relationship. And it's within that, in the Song of Songs, it's described as a locked garden, where it's only those two people that are enjoying the fruits of this garden. And on, above all of this, there is the commitment to God. And without all of these parts, romantic love is not going to be what the Lord created it to be. And so as we think about what pornography does and really what's been happening in our culture over the last several decades, we see how these different layers are just being stripped away one by one, and we're left with nothing but an empty, cheap imitation of what God created us to be. First of all, people are entering into a marriage covenant with people who are not committed to the Lord. And that just is not going to end up being what the Lord wants it to be. You need two people who love God more than they love each other, because that's what's going to hold that marriage together, is the commitment to the Lord. But on top of that, our culture for a long time has been just attacking marriage and that whole idea of being committed to one person and only being with that person in your whole life. That idea is really mocked and seems antiquated to our culture now. And so there are terrible consequences that come from just being with whoever you want to be, however you want to be with them, no commitment or whatever. There are consequences for that personally and in families and as a culture. Or we're reaping what we've sown with the terrible consequences of the breakdown of the home. But even on top of that, I mean, you essentially have, it gets to the point where people are just getting together with near strangers. You know, you get on the internet and find somebody and get together, and there's not even a personal attraction. And essentially, it is reducing the sexual relationship down to prostitution, basically, where there's just no love, there's no commitment, there's no care for the other person as the Lord created that relationship to be, but it is just a raw physical attraction for someone else, and it is just for the purpose of fulfilling lust. Now, as we think about the problem of pornography, where does that put pornography on this kind of a scale? Pornography is right down here at the bottom with essentially prostitution. And in some ways, it's not even that, because it's not even a real person. You're looking at a screen, you're looking at an image, and it is nothing of what God created romantic love to be. What a tragedy when we reduce God's beautiful gift down to an empty shell that just leaves us wanting more. Unfortunately, pornography is not just a spiritual problem and a mockery of what God created, but it is also a mental and a physical problem. And even our world and our culture is starting to realize this. In 2 Peter chapter 2, Peter is addressing problems with false teaching. And it's notable to me that Peter doesn't just note things that people were believing wrongly in this chapter, but he notes moral problems with false teaching. It comes in both forms. And this is not talking specifically about pornography in this chapter, but these principles certainly apply. 2 Peter chapter 2, beginning in verse 14, Peter writes, "They have eyes full of adultery, insatiable for sin. They entice unsteady souls. They have hearts trained in greed, accursed children." This is an apt description of what happens in pornography. Eyes full of adultery, hearts trained in greed. It's all about you and what you want and when you want it. Skipping down to verse 19, this is the nature of sin. "They promise them freedom, but they themselves are slaves of corruption. For whatever overcomes a person, to that he is enslaved." Sin promises fulfillment, it promises freedom, but it leads to more and more perverted slavery. Pornography is addictive. You know, there's a movement right now, some of you may have heard of it, called Fight the New Drug. And there's like a website, fightthenewdrug.com or .org, and it's about pornography. And it's not a religious website, it's kind of apart from that, but it's just people who have realized this is terrible, and it has tremendous effects on the brain, and pornography in many ways acts like a drug does in the way that your body reacts to it chemically and things like that. And you get addicted to it, just like you would get addicted to heavy drugs, things like that. And so you sometimes have to take similar approaches to getting people out of it as you would someone who's going through like drug rehab or something like that. So they call it Fight the New Drug. And the other problem with pornography is that it is progressive in the same sense as a drug is progressive. You start out with just a little bit, and that's satisfying to you, but then to get that same reaction in yourself, you have to do something a little more extreme and a little more and more extreme. And in the case of pornography, things just get more and more perverted. And it's just terrible. Pornography will take you so much farther than you ever imagined you would go. You start out looking at certain things and you just end up looking at more and more terrible, terrible material. Don't start down this road. If you are here this evening and you've never done this, please stay as far away from this as you can, because it will take you farther than you want to go. I've heard it put this way: sin takes you farther than you want to go, keeps you longer than you want to stay, and costs you more than you can ever pay. If you think about the example of David, we're not going to turn here tonight. I'm sure many of us are familiar with that story of David. His first problem is he stays home from war, right? He's not out leading where he's supposed to be, and he's on the roof of his house. And David's problem essentially starts as a pornography problem, if you will, in that he sees a woman bathing. And David has a choice to make in that moment. Am I going to look, or am I going to walk away and have a covenant with my eyes and act in integrity? And of course, we know what David does, but as you think about David having to harden himself at each point during that terrible sin that he commits and all the things he has to do to cover up for that sin, the nature of sin is that it deceives us and gets us to harden our conscience, to not think about what we're doing. Just do it. Don't think about it. And it leads to acting it out. Pornography doesn't just stay as something private and something, again, that's what a lot of people would say, oh, it's not a big deal. No one else is involved. Well, that's just a lie. And we'll talk more about that in just a minute. It didn't just stay private for David. Pornography at its very core is a lie. Romans 1 talks about the downward spiral of the Gentiles. They exchange the truth about God for a lie. So as we think about this, pornography is a lie on every level. Pornography is a lie about men and women. You may not realize it, but when you watch pornography, you are learning. You're submitting yourself to a more and more twisted sex education class. So if you can imagine for a moment a health class being taught by a cigarette salesman, well, how's he going to teach that class? Is he going to tell you what to do to really be healthy, what's really going to help you? He's going to tell you what will sell his product and get you addicted. And pornography makers are no different. Pornography teaches lies about how men's and women's bodies are supposed to look and how they're supposed to react, and that creates discontentment with real people. Again, recently, people have been talking about declaring pornography a public health crisis because it changes the way people normally react. I mean, if the world is seeing this, how much more ought God's people to see this? It teaches lies about how men and women should treat each other, often endorsing dangerous and violent behavior, making it seem normal or fulfilling. Of course, I haven't seen this or anything, but you know, the 50 Shades of Grey thing, I mean, just wow, how much our culture is just pushing this. It's in our face all the time. Pornography is a lie about the nature of the sexual relationship. Many of the people seen in pornography are literally actors. They are making it up and often forced to make up their reactions. Pornography makes you think these actors are finding fulfillment, when for those people, it's not just empty, but degrading, painful, and in many cases, deadly. These lies don't just affect the person viewing pornography. Many sexual perversions come from young people trying to recreate what they've seen on screen, many times against the will of their partner. It's a terrible thing, and we think about this generation that's being raised. I mean, I'm raising a daughter right now, and it's a terrifying thing to think about future, and I just pray that there are young men who are guarding themselves right now, and young women who are guarding themselves and fighting this terrible thing that's so pervasive right now. The person viewing pornography can become dissatisfied with a real relationship in marriage. And let me just say this. Sometimes I've heard the idea go around that, well, you know, you struggle with this while you're single, but when you get married, like, it just all goes away. And that is just not the case. Marriage is a tremendous blessing, and there is a right outlet for this in marriage. And 1 Corinthians 7, Paul addresses, he says, it's better to marry than to burn with passion. That is a legitimate thing. But don't just expect, if you're not married yet, that, oh, well, I'll struggle with this till I get married, and then that'll just solve everything. You fight it now. The temptation doesn't just go away when you get married. You still need to exercise self-control. You still need to keep yourself to your spouse and your spouse alone, in your body and in your mind. Marriage doesn't automatically solve a pornography problem. Pornography is also a lie about yourself. Pornography tells you lies about yourself, what you deserve, what you think you should be receiving in a relationship with another person. It is so completely and utterly self-centered. You're the center of the universe. You should be given whatever you want whenever you want it. And it's not surprising that many people start to believe and to act on these lies. And pornography is a lie about consequences. Pornography makers intentionally cut out the horrific consequences of what is happening on screen. Again, it's like cigarette companies not featuring, you know, all the lung cancer disease and the things that come from that. Same thing with alcohol. Pornography lies to you, tells you that you can get away just fine, no harm, no foul, and that could not be farther from the truth. Pornography has terrible consequences for the people that make it and the people that view it. If you're not convinced that's a problem, maybe we can talk some more afterward, but I don't really know what else to say. And if you're not aware of how pervasive this problem is in the world and even among God's people, you need to become aware, and we need to equip ourselves. There are so many people struggling with this, and we need to keep ourselves pure, and we need to be able to help others. So how can we do that? How do I get out? We're going to look at three specific strategies, and there's so much more we could say in this section of the lesson. If you'd like to talk more afterward, we can. But the three main things we need to talk about is cutting off the source, getting accountable to other people, and ultimately renewing your mind. Turn back with me to Matthew chapter 5 as we look at this idea of cutting off the source. This is the remedy that Jesus Christ gave to the problem of lust. He's not talking about some other subject here. He's talking about the problem of lust. And it's amazing to me that when you're in it, it seems like, well, this is just so extreme. This is just for like those crazy, crazy cases. This shouldn't apply to me. Jesus is talking to people who struggle with lust here. Listen to the words of our Savior. Matthew 5, beginning in verse 27 again. You have heard that it was said, you shall not commit adultery. But I say to you that everyone who looks at a woman with lustful intent has already committed adultery with her in his heart. If your right eye causes you to sin, tear it out and throw it away. For it is better that you lose one of your members than that your whole body be thrown into hell. And if your right hand causes you to sin, cut it off and throw it away. For it is better that you lose one of your members than that your whole body be thrown into hell. Jesus is pleading with us here. And he's telling us it is worth it to cut off whatever you have to cut off to get rid of this sin rather than go to hell with your whole body. But you say, oh, but my right hand is so useful. I can use it for so many other things. And it's not a bad thing in and of itself. And we say that about our internet connection or other devices or things that we're using to sin. But Jesus says you cut it off and you throw it away. You will not have been in hell for an instant before you realize I would give anything. Anything to be rid of, to be out of here, but it's too late. It's too late. I would give up anything if I could go back. And you will not have been in paradise for one instant before you realize it was so worth it. It was so much more than worth it. I would have given up more if I needed to. Wow. There's just nothing to compare to this. That's the thing that Jesus uses to motivate our response here. He says, it's better. It is better to cut off your hand or to pluck out your eye than to go into hell with your whole body. And to be clear, I don't think Jesus is speaking literally in this passage. You can sin just as well with your left hand and your left eye. But he's talking about the kind of radical measures we must be willing to take if we want to get sin out of our life, specifically sexual sin. Always come back to what Jesus said here. So what you need to do, very specifically, very practically, you need to go through and you need to make a list of all the access you have to pornographic material. And unfortunately, you have to kind of be creative here, because if you're addicted to it, when you take away the source, many times addicted people get creative with trying to find other sources. So you really have to think, if these sources were taken away, is there some other way, if I was being tempted and I really wanted it, that I could still get it? Now, it's not going to be possible to cut off every source in the world, but you have ways that you have access to it, and you have the ability to cut off the sin in your life. So cut off your ability to sin with each item on that list. And there's many ways that you could go about doing this. You can set up passwords on the device that keep you from using the device or using certain apps or other things within the device. And by passwords, I mean passwords that other people put on the device for you, not passwords that you know. That wouldn't help very much. And so that could be on specific areas. There have been friends of mine who I've set up, you know, locks on just like the internet sections or the app store or things like that. Or you can set up a lock on the whole device and just have somebody keep it for you. And when you need it, they can open it up for you and you can use it for something under supervision and then return it. Or you can go the route of filtering. There are different filtering things available. Covenant Eyes is one that is pretty popular. And there's other ones available. But what those will do is they will, to the best of their ability, of course, this internet thing is just evolving so quickly, it's hard to keep up with the technology. But they're doing their best to block as many sites as they can. If you're trying to access explicit material, it just blocks it for you. There's no perfect filter out there, but it is helpful sometimes to have that extra layer of protection and even to help you, keep you from accidentally going somewhere, accidentally accessing things. Parents, I just think it is wise to not let your kids have unfiltered internet access at all. For me, this all started in middle school when my parents gave me a desktop computer in my room. I love my parents dearly, but I wish they had never done that. And there's accountability software as well. There is software that will monitor all of your online activity and the different apps and things, and then it will send a report to someone of your choosing. You put in their email address or whatever, and it will tell them what's going on. And the idea behind that is to know that wherever you go, someone's going to see it. And when you bring sin out into the light, you know, Satan does his best work in the dark. When you know someone else is going to see it, it is a powerful deterrent in that moment. We got to remember, above all, that God always sees us. But sometimes it's helpful to have that extra motivation of knowing that someone else is going to see what I'm doing. But let me reiterate, if you've tried maybe some of those things and it has not helped you get the sin out of your life, if you cannot handle it, cut it off. Sell it, smash it, do whatever you have to do to get rid of it. If you need to, cut off the entire internet access at your house. You don't need Wi-Fi. You don't need an internet connection. You can go other places and you can get places, internet places where you're supervised, local library or whatever. Hebrews 12:14 talks about pursue holiness without which no one will see the Lord. You do not need the internet. You do need to be holy. And we've got to get our priorities straight. We need to get accountable. This is probably the thing that helped me the most in my struggle. I fought it by myself for a long time, and I still remember how hard it was at first to open up to people about this. But that sharing my struggle with others in a helpful, constructive way was one of the biggest things that helped me in this battle. And this is biblical wisdom. James chapter 5 and verse 16. I'm sure we're familiar with this, but in James 5 and verse 16, he says, therefore, confess your sins to one another and pray for one another that you may be healed. The prayer of a righteous person has great power as it is working. And Proverbs 28 and verse 13 is another really helpful piece of wisdom on this. Proverbs 28 and verse 13, whoever conceals his transgressions will not prosper, but he who confesses and forsakes them will obtain mercy. There's a right way to go about confession, and there's a wrong way to go about confession. If you just get together with a group and you're all just kind of commiserating about how bad you're doing, and oh, you think you're doing bad, well, I'm really doing bad. That's how some accountability groups work, and that's just not helpful. It can make it seem normal, and you're not really helping each other. You need to find someone who is doing better than you are, someone who is doing well in this area. Jesus talked about the blind leading the blind. What happens? They both fall in the pit. So you need to find someone who is doing well with this that you can open up to. And please, if you're a guy, find a guy. If you're a girl, find a girl. I've been aware of sometimes there have been co-ed accountability situations. Do not go there. Your significant other is not your accountability partner. That's asking for trouble. Find someone of the same gender who is doing well, who can help you in this area. And then you need to commit to reaching out to that person. Usually, you'll at least meet once a week in an accountability kind of situation. But sometimes if that's all that's done is, you know, a couple of people or a group will get together and then say, okay, well, how'd you do this week? How'd you do this week? And, oh, well, I messed up this many times, and I messed up this many times. And the problem with that, I mean, there's confession, there's openness there, but it's after the fact. It's not really helping you necessarily to stop. It's just reporting on where you've done poorly. Effective accountability is involved as early as possible. When you start to be tempted, you are reaching out and saying, please pray for me. I'm being tempted right now. I need help. I need to open up about this. And you know, technology is a double-edged sword because it brings in a ton of problems, but it also gives us access to a lot of help almost anywhere that we are. If you've got a phone, you can text, you know, all sorts of people that can help you. So you need to pray and text at the first sign of temptation. This is really where I think helped me to turn the corner with this, is I committed to texting a friend of mine and saying, hey, here's what's going on. I'm struggling. I need your prayers right now. And it would see, it seems ridiculous at first. It's like, well, I'm going to be texting somebody a whole bunch of times a day because this is really tempting to me. Well, so be it. You know, it doesn't hurt them for you to be texting. And if it helps you, wow, this is a can be a great tool. And do a couple of things in that text. State the temptation. Say, here's what's being tempting, whether it's the internet or whether it's a situation you're in or whatever. And then say, here's what I'm going to do about it. You know, I'm at home. Everybody else has left the house. I'm really being tempted right now. I'm getting out of the house for 10 minutes. I'm going to go take a walk. I'm going to go do some push-ups. I'm going to go, you know, just fill in the blank. You tell them what you're going to do about it. And even if they're not available to take your text or your call in that moment, the fact that you've identified the temptation and you've got something you're going to do about it is tremendously helpful because you've brought the temptation out into the light. You see it for what it is, and now you know, okay, here's what I'm going to do about it. That is tremendously helpful. It's been tremendously helpful for me. You know, I think about Joseph and his situation with Potiphar's wife. If he was to do something like that, you know, Potiphar's wife again, running. And just that's the way he got out of that. He was willing to do whatever he needed to do to be pure. We need to identify triggers, if I can use that word, and vulnerable situations in our life. If Satan's using the same tactic to get you over and over again, figure out what that is. If it's a particular time of day, if it's a particular person in your life, it's a particular situation that you find yourself in, figure that out and figure out how you're going to fortify yourself in that area. If you can cut it off, cut it off. Don't go there. Don't be with that person, whatever you need to do. But if it's something you have, where you have to be there, you have to do that, plan ahead. Don't let Satan keep taking advantage of you in the same ways. Figure out where you're vulnerable and fortify yourself in those areas and get extra accountable. Say, hey, I've struggled in this area before. I'm going into this place or this situation again. Please pray for me. And, you know, just be aware of that. Reach out early. And let me say this. The person who is struggling should be the one initiating the accountability. There's a big difference between somebody texting you and saying, hey, how's it going? Hey, how's it going? Hey, how's it going? And kind of digging for information versus you texting somebody and saying, hey, here's how I'm doing. Here's how I'm doing. Here's how I'm doing. And that is much more effective, especially in the long run, as you're trying to develop strength in this. If you want help, you reach out and get help. And if what you're doing isn't working, change. There are a lot of other strategies we don't have time to talk about tonight, but be flexible. Figure out what works. It is worth whatever you have to do to avoid sin. And finally, we need to renew our minds. This is the ultimate goal of all of this. The ultimate goal is not just to like have to cut off every source and not ever have access to any sin the rest of our life. We can't do that without going out of the world. But the goal is to get to the point where we don't want the sin. And before we get to that, I don't usually recommend books. I recommend this book, Finally Free by Heath Lambert. It's a book specifically about pornography, overcoming pornography. It's a very pure book. I will say not every book I've seen or read on this has been that way. Every Young Man's Battle was a problem for me. I don't recommend that book to people. It has some explicit details, I feel like, in it. This book, I pretty wholeheartedly recommend. I think Heath Lambert is a Baptist, but there's not a lot of dangerous theology in this book. There's a couple of hints at things, but it's not really about that kind of thing. But it's very helpful. It's very full of scripture, which is what I really appreciate about it most, is he's approaching it from the Bible, and it's very practical. So if you're here and you know someone who's struggling or you're struggling and you just don't know what to do, this is a good starting point. It'll be helpful to get in touch with people who can help you. But if you want reading material, this is where I would recommend starting. So we need to renew our minds. We need to get our desires back to where God wants them to be. We won't read Psalm 101 tonight, but David describes walking with integrity and within his house, hating the evil, loving the Lord, and loving what is good. That's where we need to get our hearts back to. This book brings up a point that says you have to have three things come together in order to sin. You have to have access to the sin, you have to have time to sin, and you have to have the desire to sin. We've already talked about cutting off your access to it, taking radical measures with your time, but the ultimate goal is to kind of be in this area, if I can use this Venn diagram. Even if you have access, even if you had time, if you were in a room full of pornography, you just don't want it. You could have access to it, you could have time to do it, but you realize how terrible and empty it is, and you just don't want it anymore. And that's not where people addicted to it start out, but that's where we're trying to get to. Taking the measures, the radical measures in those first two areas, gives you space and time to change your heart to where you don't want it anymore. That's the goal. You know, as you struggle with habitual sin, there is a balance that we have to learn in learning the grace of God. Another thing I appreciate about this book is it focuses on grace a lot, which I think is really important. Let me illustrate it this way. Here's a guy who is struggling with sin, and he feels just weighed down by the sins that he's committed. Maybe he's repented even of these sins, but he just still feels so dirty and so guilty from all the sins that he's committed. And here God is, he's willing to forgive those sins, willing to accept that. And he says, he thinks to himself, well, I'm just already so dirty, and I've just done so much wrong for too long, and you know, one more sin won't matter. And so he sins again, because he already feels so dirty and guilty. This is an example of the kind of guy we find in 2 Corinthians 2 and verse 7, where there was the man who had been disciplined by the Corinthian congregation, and he says, you've got to restore your love to him, or he's going to be swallowed up by too much sorrow. We can get to a place where we're too sorrowful about our sin, if you will, that we're just despairing and we're not really relying on God's forgiveness and God's grace or trusting God when he says, if you repent, I forgive you of that sin. Feeling forgiven is an important thing for the Christian. And sometimes our feelings are fickle and here and there, but we need to trust God that when he forgives us and shows us his grace, he really does forgive us. But there's the opposite extreme, and here's the guy who looks at God's forgiveness and says, oh, wow, you know, God has just forgiven me of so much, and he's taken all my sins away, and you know what? Well, if God's paying for it, well, one more sin won't matter. And so I'll just go ahead and commit another sin. And you see how these guys are looking at it totally different ways, but it's the same root problem. It's the same result. Well, one more sin doesn't matter. And so we can go to one extreme or the other, and I've seen both extremes in my own life, and sometimes you try to correct one of them and rely more on God's grace, but then you kind of misuse God's grace, take advantage of it. This guy on the right is the Romans 6:1 guy, right? What shall we say then? Shall we continue in sin that grace may abound? May it never be, is Paul's answer to that. So we need to be this guy in the middle. A great passage to sum this up is Titus 2:11-14. We're not going to take time to read all this tonight. But go and look at that. It talks about how the grace of God has appeared, bringing salvation for all people. But it teaches us to live soberly, righteously, upright lives in the present age. Grace is the center of all of this. And we've got to learn to apply God's grace in our life as we fight for purity. We need to learn to combat lies with God's truth. Psalm 119 verse 11 talks about, I've treasured up your word in my heart that I may not sin against you. And this is just a practical exercise. I saw something like this in a book that I read and just kind of modified it with some of my own examples. So here, you fill it in with the lies that you tell yourself when you're being tempted. Oh, a little fantasizing won't hurt. Well, the truth is, like Job 31, I have made a covenant with my eyes. How then could I gaze at a virgin? Does not he, God, see my ways and number my steps? Another lie. I can keep this hidden. No one has to know. God will bring every deed into judgment, every secret thing, whether good or evil. Pornography will satisfy me. No, my people have committed two evils. They've forsaken me, the fountain of living waters, and have hewed out cisterns for themselves, broken cisterns that can hold no water. Sin is empty like a broken cistern that can't hold water. I don't have to take radical action against this sin. If your right eye causes you to sin, tear it out and throw it away. That is what Jesus said on the matter. Oh, I can control this sin. I won't allow it to get any worse. They entice by sensual passions of the flesh those who are barely escaping from those who live in error. They promise them freedom, but they themselves are slaves of corruption. For whatever overcomes a person, to that he is enslaved. This sin won't have serious consequences for me. Do not be deceived. God is not mocked. For whatever one sows, that will he also reap. For the one who sows to his own flesh will from the flesh reap corruption. But the one who sows to the Spirit will from the Spirit reap eternal life. Make your own cards, index cards or whatever. This is exactly how Jesus fought temptation, isn't it? Satan gives him lies as he's there in the wilderness. And what does he do every time? It is written. It is written. It is written. If Jesus did it and he lived perfectly, we ought to learn something from that. We talked about Jeremiah 2, the broken cisterns, forsaking the fountain of living waters. Maybe one way to put this, sometimes it's helpful to ask why we're turning to the sin in the first place. Sometimes it's just because of the lust and we just want the pleasure. But there is sometimes that there is a deeper problem in our heart or in our life or even in our past that's giving us pain and giving us difficulty. And we're trying to, if I can use the word like medicate that pain, like you're turning to the wrong medicine, basically. You're trying to heal something in yourself, but you're looking to something sinful to do it. And that's just not how it's going to work. And so what you have to do sometimes is you have to think back and figure out, is there something, some pain or some loneliness or some grief or something in my life that's causing me to turn to this? If I can deal with that root of the problem, it will help me in dealing with the pornography, which may actually be more of a symptom than the actual problem. This is something that was introduced to me much later, and it really helped me some. There's a friend of mine who talked about how he didn't even realize that when his mom left his family when he was really young, that he had just struggled with feeling unloved and worthless himself for so long. And it wasn't until he really got a brother to help him with that that he really made progress in dealing with pornography, because that was one big reason he was turning to this sin in particular, was to fill that hole in himself. So why am I turning to this sin? That can be a complicated question, but it's an important one to ask, especially in the long run as you're trying to overcome this. You know, we need to both flee sin and we need to fill our lives with what is good. 2 Timothy 2:22, flee youthful lusts, yes, and pursue righteousness, faith, love, peace with those who call on the Lord from a pure heart. We emphasize the first part of the verse, and we ought to emphasize the second part of the verse too. Proverbs 5, the beginning of the chapter, says, avoid the wicked woman. But what does the latter part of Proverbs 5 tell us to do? Rejoice in the wife of your youth. Flee and fill. Do both of those things. But ultimately, what we need to do is we need to fill our hearts and fill our desires and fill our life with the Lord. We need to look forward to seeing His face. And let that be our greatest motivation. 1 John chapter 3, beginning in verse 2. Beloved, we are God's children now, and what we will be has not yet appeared. But we know that when He appears, we shall be like Him, because we shall see Him as He is. And everyone who thus hopes in Him purifies himself as He is pure. Just one glimpse of Him in glory will all the toils of life repay. It is so worth it to cut off whatever you need to cut off, to talk to whoever you need to talk to, and to take whatever measures you need to take to get sin out of your life, whether it's this sin or any other. Jesus said, "Blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God."